My biggest piece of advice to parents is to be present. You know, they talk about quality time, and quality time is important, but I like the term quantity time. If you give your kid 5 really good minutes a day, well, that's good. That's 5 more good minutes than other kids get. But what if you gave them a few hours?
Welcome to the Become a Writer Today podcast with Brian Collins. Here you'll find practical advice and interviews for all kinds of writers.
Would you write about your family? And if so, how would you decide what to include and what to take out? Hi there, my name is Brian Collins and welcome to the Become a Writer Today podcast. The reason I'm asking that question is I just got off the call with my editor for a book that I finished. The book I finished is about parenting. It's actually about my journey as a parent. So I've got 3 kids, and our first son, who's now 15, was born back in 2006. Our daughter is 10, and we've also got a 2-year-old who's running around the house as well. And the book is kind of more about my journey as a parent rather than necessarily about medical advice about parenting or something that's full of facts, figures, and research. Because when I was writing the parenting book, I figured that there's a lot of these parenting books out there already. So I wanted to do something that was a little bit different. The other reason why I wrote this particular book is the last book I wrote was a business book. And it was full of all that kind of research, and it was full of all those kind of takeaways and full of all those interviews. It's called This Is Working, and it's on Amazon. So I wanted to do something that was a little bit more creative and a little bit more personal. And I wanted to include a lot of the stories that I journaled about over the years with the kids. So that's why I wrote the parenting book. I also just wanted to do it because I guess I thought it'd be fun. I also didn't think it would take this long. So for context, I started outlining the book last April. Excuse me, it's now March. So we're almost a year later, and I thought the book would be out by now, but I spent quite a lot of time rewriting it and reworking some sections of the book. I've rewritten it maybe 4 times, and now my editor suggested some changes that I should make. But one of the questions or problems that I had was how to decide what to put into the book so I'm being honest about my experiences as a dad, but also how to decide what to leave out so I'm being fair to the kids. Because at the end of the day, they don't get a say in the book, so to speak, because they're not actually writing it. And this is just my experiences, not their experiences. So what I'll probably do is give a draft of the book for my wife to read and ask her, is there anything that's unfair for the kids? And maybe I'll give it to my oldest son to read as well. But I said this to my editor because I also wanted to know, did she think there was anything in the book that, you know, could be, or that I should take out? And one of the things she suggested was to use pseudonyms, which I'm doing. I also wanted to figure out how to get a book like this into the hands of other dads, because that's the target audience for this particular book. And there's actually not a huge amount of books out there for dads, at least books like this. So when I was doing my research, I actually came across Dr. Paul Reeves. He's based in Detroit, and he runs his own radio show. He's a former principal, and he's written a book called A Principal's Family Principles, which I thought was very clever because he was a high school principal. So he's got lots of experience with kids, and he shares lots of those experiences in his book. His book is full of his stories within his own family and also experiences he's had in high school. So I recently had the chance to catch up with Paul, and I asked him about how he decided to write a parenting book, how he got it into the hands of other dads, and what it's like to write in this particular type of genre. But before we get over to this week's interview with Paul, if you'd like to support the show, I've set up a Patreon, patreon.com/becomeawritertoday. I've got 3 tiers. So for a couple of dollars, you'll support the show because it takes me 2 to 3 hours to record each episode, maybe a little bit longer depending on the length. To record the episodes, to get it produced, research the questions, and so on. Now, I do have the help of an audio engineer who helps me with some of it and a virtual assistant. But your support on Patreon will help me publish more episodes of the Become a Writer Today show. And that's one of the things I would like to do, is to record more episodes and publish them more frequently this year. So I've got a couple of different tiers which you can check out. Depending on which tier you pick, I'll give you access to all of my writing books. I'll give you a discount for Grammarly, and I'll also give you discount for my writing courses. I'll put a link in the show notes. But with that, let's go over to this week's interview with Dr. Paul Reeves.
Thank you, Brian. Glad to be here. And yes, busy as heck, keeps me off the street and out of trouble. Good way to look at it, right?
So I'm in Ireland. You're out in Detroit. Is that right?
Yeah, born and raised in Detroit. Still here. I won't be here for much longer. Going to move to the southern United States where it's a whole lot warmer than Detroit. But yeah, been here a long time.
Yeah, I should move there too. It's not that warm in Ireland but these days. So would you be able to give listeners a flavor for who you are and what you like to write about?
Yeah, well, I was a teacher for a long time, and then I became a principal for an even longer time. And so I got to know kids really well and teachers and the educational system, and did all that good stuff, have several degrees, including my doctorate in education. And I spent my whole career there, also worked as a musician for a long time. And I had a newspaper column, and I decided to retire from education and focus on radio, the radio station, writing music, and performing as well. So still keeping busy.
And you wrote your book, A Principal's Family Principles, in 2015, or at least it was published in 2015. What's the key ideas in the book, and what's it about?
It originally started off as a blog. I was writing a blog post every week as a school principal, trying to help parents guide their kids through life and to be happy and healthy and well-adjusted, and signs to look out for, trouble signs, also good signs. And then it evolved into a book. After I got to a certain point, I realized I have enough for a book, but if I add a few more details, we can actually make this work. And so it came out in 2015 originally, and then got republished later on. But the main gist of it is, as it says on the cover, After a Principal's Family Principles, raising your kids to be happy and healthy while enjoying them to the fullest. And then we have to remember, we only have our kids, for a limited number of years, and then they grow up and they move out and get married and have kids of their own. So we have that window of opportunity to influence them and guide them toward the right things in life. And that's what the book is all about, the good, the bad, and how to get out of the bad and how to enhance the good.
When you were writing the blog posts that informed the book, did you write these while you were raising the kids, or when you were looking back on your life with the kids?
My kids were still here. I think the youngest was about 14 at the time. So they were 14, 17, and 20. So some of the stories were pertinent to that exact moment, but other stories were from when they were younger as well.
Okay. And how did you decide, because I'm actually writing a book about parenting, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, because how did you decide what stories to put in the book and what to leave out?
Well, yeah, that was a labor of love. There were so many stories to tell. So I tried to find a diverse cross-section of stories. We dealt with drugs, we dealt with alcohol, we dealt with kids excelling in life, in music and sports and in class. And I tried to get one or two of everything in the book so it would be pertinent. Anybody who picked up the book can learn something from it as far as raising kids or working with kids.
Okay. And did you show the book to your kids before you published it?
No, I didn't do that. I told them that I was doing it and that it was coming. And then I presented each of them a copy of the book, gift-wrapped, for Christmas later that year. And they read it cover to cover, and they recognized, everything in that book is true. Now, not every book, not every story is about my own kids. It's also about kids I dealt with in schools, as well as parents I dealt with in schools. And so not every story is about them. And I didn't make them look bad, so they were happy. And, life has been going on pretty well since then.
Yeah. I was curious about when you said you didn't make them look bad, because one of the things or the issues that I had when I was writing the book is I was conscious that I have to be fair to the kids and that they're not necessarily getting a say in the book because they're not writing it. So did you have a rule where you said, I can't say this and I should say that?
Not really. I had one story in there. It involved my daughter. She always wanted to go to these school dances, and we said, no dances until you're in seventh grade. And of course, that made her upset because all of her other friends got to go to these dances. And your other friends don't live here. You do. You're not going until seventh grade. And so the very first dance in seventh grade, she said, well, I'm in seventh grade. We have a dance Friday. Can I go? Well, yeah, I didn't want her to go, but we made a promise. So off she went. And it was a 7 to 10 o'clock on a Friday night, which I thought was way too late on a Friday for seventh graders to be having a dance. But it wasn't my school. It was somebody else's school. And so she went, and I said, you can go 7 to 9. I'll be there at 9. You come out and see me, and then we'll make a decision on the final hour. And basically, I just wanted to check her overall appearance, her disposition, if she was, because she was a pretty good kid.
Yeah.
But you get swept up in these environments with a bunch of kids having a party, and who knows? So I said, you come out and see me at 9, and we'll talk about the final hour. Okay, great. So got her there in time for 7, went back at 9, and she didn't come out. And 9:05, she still wasn't out. And finally, about 10 after 9, she came out and said, sorry about that. I didn't see the clock, so I lost track of time. So I said, get in the car. And she goes, okay. And so she got in. I said, I put the car in reverse. She goes, what are we doing? I said, we're going home. And she said, well, you said we can talk about the final hour. I said, that's right. If you had been here at 9 o'clock, we would have talked about the final hour. You were late, which kind of confirms that, I'm a little uncomfortable about this to begin with. So we're going home, and maybe next time you'll remember that, when I make a statement, I really mean it. It's not just kind of a suggestion. And of course, she broke down in tears and, all heck broke loose, and that's the way it goes. But from that moment on, I really believe, now as a seventh grade girl, so she was 13, I really believe that set the tone for the rest of her life. And she never did that again. She was never late again. She never tried to bob and weave and circumvent the rules. And she's grown up to be a very responsible adult.
Is that story in the book?
Oh, yes. Yeah, very much so.
Okay. So when you published these as blog posts on your site, and then you decided you wanted to write a book, did you go back and rewrite them, or how did you put them all together into a book?
Yeah, I took what I had written before, because they had been written over a period of 5 or 6 years. And yeah. Although I hadn't touched them in about 4 years. And yeah. So I went back and rewrote several and wrote some new ones as well to kind of freshen it up, because there was a period of years there where I had written nothing about kids. And so I wanted to add those stories in as well.
And did you decide on a particular order for the stories that go into the book, like in terms of chronology, or how, or did you edit it using the different format?
Yeah, there was a definite purpose to how they got in the book and the order they got in, but it had nothing to do with chronology. It had more to do with topics and heaviness. You know, I didn't want to have 3 or 4 really bad stories about drugs in a row. So I'd have a funny story, then maybe a story about alcohol, and then an uplifting story, and then maybe a story about a kid who had a rough time at home. So I tried to mix and match all over the book so you weren't caught up in one particular idea as you floated through the book. You got the whole flavor no matter where you were.
Yeah. So one of the things I'm wondering about parenting books is, do you have to write this for a particular type of parent? Is that something you thought about when you were working on this book?
No, this is pretty much written for anybody who's a parent. I used to joke on my radio show, it's written for anybody who's had kids, knows kids, has ever seen a kid, or ever was a kid. it's all for you. Because it reaches out to everybody. It's just good, solid, high-quality parenting advice based on over 30 years of working with kids in schools. I mean, I worked with thousands of kids and saw everything from the lowest of lows to the highest of highs. And then my own 3 kids, you know, I was very close to them as they were growing up. We did everything together. I monitored everything. And so we kept an eye on things fairly closely. So the fact that I've been successful working with kids, that, you know, if I can help other people, that maybe that's what I'm supposed to do. So that's exactly why it got out there.
And do you know if mothers or fathers bought this book or both, or is it skewed in one direction?
No, it's written for everybody, whether you're a mom or a dad. There's advice for parenting in general, male or female. Yeah. And there might be a few that are slanted a little toward a mom or a little toward the dad. But for the most part, good parenting is good parenting, male or female.
Yeah. What I'm curious is, though, would dads actually buy this book themselves, or do they need like the other parents in the family to buy it, give it to them and say, here, read this?
Yeah, it's a good question. There are a number of dads who have purchased it, and they don't necessarily tell the world they've purchased it for the very reasons you're sort of hinting at. You know, they don't want to admit, hey, maybe I need to learn something from this guy. But you know, if you don't work with kids every day, now again, I worked with thousands of kids over the years. There are people who never work with kids. You know, I know I have a lot of friends, especially on my street, who are engineers for major automotive organizations, you know, Ford Motor Company, General Motors. Well, kids don't work there, so they never see any kids at all, except when they get home and they see their 1, 2, or 3 kids. That's all. They get 2 or 3 kids a day. I had thousands every day. So I had a lot more experience than they did. And again, I saw everything from the bottom to the top. So when I wrote the book, a lot of people bought it just for that. Like, okay, this guy's seen it all. I'm going to find out what he learned. And it got to the point, even before the book came out, people in my town where we live, if their kids wanted to do something, they would call me to find out if I'm letting my kids do it. And if I said, I said, no, she's not allowed to do that, then they wouldn't let their kids go. And we kept that secret. The kids never knew about that until they got to about 25 years old and somebody spilled the beans. They said, you got to be kidding. You know, especially my daughter, she goes, so parents called you to find out if their kids could go places. And I said, yeah, that's basically how it works. So, you know, they knew. I mean, I was around thousands of kids every day. They were around 1, 2, or 3. And so my book has helped them quite a bit in that regard.
Yeah, one chapter that stood out to me when you sent me a copy is the bullying chapter. So I actually have a chapter in my book about bullies as well.
Oh, yeah.
Would you be able to maybe explain some of the advice that you have about bullying in this particular chapter, or what your approach is?
Yeah, that's a tough issue. And it finally came to light, I'm guessing, about 10 years ago, at least in the United States. It was kept quiet before that. But kids, as well as adults, can be mean. They can be cruel to each other and call each other names or close them out of groups or kind of mess them over. And there are different techniques to overcome it when you're a kid anyway. You know, one of them is you have to report it. And, you know, so somebody has to know what's going on. If you don't tell anybody that, hey, this guy twice my size is hitting me in the arm every day, no one's going to ever know. So you got to report it. And then for a while, try to avoid them. Now, we had a guy, he played basketball in Detroit. He's in the Hall of Fame, Isaiah Thomas. He grew up in Chicago, in a very bad part of Chicago. He said it was so bad, every day he had to fight, literally fight, to get to school. And he would have to fight on his way home because that's just the neighborhood it was. You're walking down the street, someone's going to fight you. And he was smaller than a lot of kids, but he fought them. And he said, I found out when you fight a bully, they're going to walk away and find someone else to pick on. And so sometimes that's the rule in life, too. I don't mean go punch somebody in the nose, but if you meet a bully head on with some of his own nonsense, it tends to go away because they don't want to mess with people who are going to mess with them. They want to mess with people who are weak and won't tell anybody. So definitely report it. But it's also nice if a third person, a witness, happens to see it and they report it. And then it gets taken care of fairly quickly. And in my schools, we set up a program that if you see any bullying at all, name calling, pushing somebody down the hall, tell an adult, make sure it gets to me and we'll take care of it. So I won't say we never had bullying in my schools, but we reduced it greatly just because of that. We had everybody on alert and it wasn't allowed. If you do this, we're going to send you home. And if we catch you, we're going to send you home even more days. So don't do it. So that's kind of the unspoken rule, but really the spoken rule, you have to speak out about it. Otherwise, the bullies get away with it.
Good advice. Are there any other chapters in the book that have resonated a lot with readers?
Yeah, mostly the ones that involved day-to-day activities or specific activities, maybe, that involved humor. Like one time we thought my three-year-old son was going to die. We had to rush him to the hospital. The doctors couldn't find out what was wrong. And it turned out he had pretended he was a dinosaur the day before eating the grass. And I had just put fertilizer on the grass. So.
Oh, God.
He basically ate poison. And eventually it got out of his system. And the doctor said, we don't know what happened here. We couldn't find anything wrong. And now he's 100% fine. And so we went home. And it wasn't until years later, like maybe literally 10 years later, we were discussing it. And he said, oh, I can tell you what happened. And then he told us the dinosaur eating fertilized grass story. And all those years, we were on pins and needles. Like, we got to watch what he eats. We have
in case something happens.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm not sure if we should put you on eBay and sell you or keep you for another 10 years, but we kept him around. So stories like that, the personal stories that people seem to like a lot, the positive stories. And my biggest piece of advice to parents is to be present. You know, they talk about quality time, and quality time is important, but I like the term quantity time. If you give your kid 5 really good minutes a day, well, that's good. That's 5 more good minutes than other kids get. But what if you gave them a few hours? You know, what if you came home from work every day on time and didn't go out drinking, didn't go out bowling with the boys, just came home and spent that time with your kids? Your kids are going to, first of all, they want that. They want that security of their parents being around. But secondly, you're going to get to know your kids better. You'll have more of an influence on them as far as guiding them toward the right roads in life.
Yeah, I like that. So you also have a radio show, Dr. Paul's Family Talk, and your radio show, even despite the name, it covers an awful lot of topics. So when we were chatting just before the podcast, you were explaining that you have a lot of writers on the show.
Yeah, that's how we started off. And it's a long story as to how that evolved. The book came out in 2015. And that's when I got my radio show in 2015. So the radio show was being used to promote the book. So we would talk about that and have people on to discuss family. And it went very well. And then eventually we branched off into other areas, music, politics, government, sports, whatever, humor. And after a few years of doing that on Detroit radio, I started my own radio station on the internet called Impact Radio USA and took my show there, which is Dr. Paul's Family Talk. And we talk about everything under the sun. There's really nothing that's off limits. We are still family oriented. So, you know, we don't do, we don't swear or discuss inappropriate topics that we wouldn't want kids to hear. So it's still appropriate. But it's not necessarily strictly family. Like the other day we talked about, on Monday's show, we talked about socialism, for example, and the aspect of every kid gets a trophy, a participation trophy. And we talked about how that's not really good, at least from my viewpoint. You know, when I was a kid, I worked really hard to win awards and to be number one. And now you show up, and if you finish in last place, you still get a trophy. So
you still get one.
Yeah. So we talked about that on Monday's show, which I guess could be somewhat geared toward family, but it's really more geared towards society. So
yeah,
we talk about everything. Initially, we had writers on the show because writers are always willing to go on shows to promote their books. The other guests are a little bit tougher to book. They're not used to promoting themselves. Well, you know, I mentioned engineers. I'd love to have an engineer on the show, but engineers aren't normally geared to going in public and telling everybody how great they are and what they did today to design the latest car. But authors are, and musicians are, and artists are to a degree, but especially authors, because they're constantly expressing themselves anyway. That's what writing is all about. And so they love to go on shows and promote their books. So it was an easy way to get guests fairly quickly. But over the over time, now we've branched off and we're back to having anything and everything on, as long as they add some value to the show.
And do you have a lot of writers who are listeners? It sounds like you would if you've focused on that over the years.
Yeah, we've definitely picked up a whole bunch of writers who listen to the show fairly regularly now, and we exchange ideas back and forth.
Yeah. So I was curious, you said that this is a radio show over the internet. So does that mean it's podcasted, but I can also get it using radio if I'm in my car or in the kitchen in Detroit?
Yeah, well, because it's on the internet, you just have to have an internet connection. It won't be on your car radio, but if you have an internet connection, yeah, you can get it wherever you are in the world. We broadcast 24/7 around the clock, but we also have a podcast page. My shows are on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and that's 11 o'clock a.m. Detroit time, which I think is 4 p.m. Ireland time, right?
Yeah.
5 hours ahead. And then after the show is over, we take the entire show and put it on the podcast page. So if people couldn't tune into the live show, they can hear it on the podcast page whenever they want to.
Okay. And how do people find the show or find the radio show?
Just go to our website, and that's impactradiousa.com. Easy to remember, impactradiousa.com. And on every page, there's a button that says listen now. If you just click on that, it'll take you right to the live feed of the radio station. And there's also a link to the podcast page on there as well.
Okay. Okay. And do you have any plans to write any other books or any other parenting books?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there are several in the pipeline. One of the issues with writing for me right now is the radio shows and the radio station are taking so much time that there's not a lot of focus time left for writing. And I have to be able to have hours at a time, maybe 3, 4, 5 hours to write. Some people can, you know, whip out their computer at a restaurant or in the airport and write for 10 minutes. Well, I'm not one of those people. I need to have serious focus time. And it's hard to find that now, but those days will be coming shortly. We're finding ways to branch off and send some of our radio work to other people, which will free me up to do more writing. But yeah, definitely. I have a book that's almost done now. It's geared towards school principals. And the working, we don't have a final title, but it's along the lines of the 10 most significant things that every principal needs to know. And we get into staffing and budgets and you know, personnel dealing with the community. And so while it's geared toward principals, at the same time, it's geared toward anybody who is a leader or a CEO or a president of a company. It shows them how to navigate and get in and out of situations successfully.
Yeah. I imagine you have a lot of experience that you can bring to a book like that. For your own research process, do you read other parenting books?
Or
do
you
need to at this stage? You do?
Well, yeah, I try to read everything I can get my hands on. And over the years, you know, after you've read a number of books on a particular topic, you find there are certain authors who are better than others. And so I'll try to go with those people, including, like, you know, Dr. James Dobson. I don't know if you know him. He's a significant guy in the U.S. and I think throughout the world in different areas. He started focus on the family back in the 70s, and now he's branched off into his own thing. And he writes on the family all of the time, sends a monthly newsletter, writes, I don't know how many books he has out there, tons. And so I'll try to read whatever he puts out. But yeah, if there's a good book on parenting, I'm always willing to read it, even though my kids are gone. My kids are all grown up and, you know, gone and moved out of the house and live elsewhere. But you're never too old to learn. And so I will learn new information anytime it's out there.
Do you think a parenting book needs to have a lot of science in it, or is it okay to draw on personal stories?
Either way, you know, people enjoy reading the personal stories, and that's why I put them in my book. Now, there are some where I quoted research, very specific research on alcoholism and bullying and drugs. because, you know, my kids were not into that. They didn't sit around drinking every day, but some kids do and some parents do. And so I went to the research on that. So you can get the hardcore facts based on research in my book, but you can also get the personal stories that just reflect how, you know, kids interact every day. And before all of this came together with, you know, I mentioned the blog and then the book, before all of that, I used to send a fairly detailed email every Sunday night to all of the parents in my school. And it would talk about what's coming up. You know, the testing is coming up. The basketball game is on Wednesday, whatever we had going on. But I started each email off with a personal story, something that had happened in my family. My kids were much younger then, you know, middle school. I was a middle school principal. I had two kids of middle school age. And so I would tell stories of what happened, how we interacted, what happened over the weekend. And people absolutely loved that. There were people who couldn't wait to get my emails every Sunday night just to read the latest, what happened to Paul and his family. And yeah, that was pretty cool because I was their principal and they felt like they knew me personally, and they didn't. You know, we got 1,000 parents. You can't know them all personally, but they felt connected to me. And that led to the blog being done a few years later, which led to the book.
Yeah, people relate to other people if they can recognize themselves in stories, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm curious, have you read Irma Bombeck?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to read her all the time. I know she's passed away, but she had a lot of good information, always under the cover of humor. But if you read between the lines, she had very good sound information.
So I read a lot of Irma during the summer, and you know, I thought she was really good. But I guess some of the advice in what Irma has in her books is probably a little bit dated now. So how do you approach, you know, giving advice about parenting when that advice has changed or when things have moved on?
Yeah, well, the biggest changes over the years has been with technology and social media. You know, when my kids were little, I didn't have to worry about Facebook or Twitter or all this other nonsense going on out there that kids get wrapped up in fairly early. You know, almost every kid has a smartphone now, for example, and they could get a text at 2 a.m. from some fool who's being inappropriate with them. Well, I didn't have to worry about that when my kids were little, but now you do. And so you have to have rules and parameters in place within your home to safeguard your kids against this. And if you don't, bad things are going to happen and you might not even know about it. So I always tell parents to stay vigilant, stay on top of things. Don't leave anything to chance. Pay attention at all times.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with you. The technology piece, like I have 3 kids. I was complaining about one of them being on their phone a lot to my parents. Mm-hmm. And they were saying they didn't have that problem when we were kids.
Yeah. And I even got to the point as my kids got a little bit older, I bought a device or downloaded some software that allowed the computer would shut the internet off at a particular time. I think I had it set for 9 p.m. That way they couldn't sneak in the computer room at midnight and do whatever they were going to do. At 9 o'clock, it was going off. Now, if they had work to do after 9 p.m., which they sometimes did, they'd have to come and get me. I'd have to turn it back on. And then when they were done, they'd let me know and I'd turn it back off. But that's what I mean about the safeguards. If you just leave everything wide open, because the internet right now is kind of sort of wide open, you can find anything you want. The really bad stuff is out there, and you don't want your kids exposed to that. So if you don't keep them away from that, they'll find it one way or the other.
Yeah, maybe that's something I should write about more in the book. So, Paul, I think we've already covered the podcast and the radio show. Is there anywhere else you'd like listeners to check out your work?
No, that's basically it. You can find me a couple of places. I mentioned the radio station, impactradiousa.com. You can check out my personal page, paulwreeves.com, paulwreeves.com. And that gives you some more information on my background as a principal, as a musician, as a writer, as a radio host. It's all there.
It was very nice to talk to you today.
Thank you, Brian. You too. I enjoyed it. Very good questions and very good job today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you did, please consider leaving a short review on the iTunes store or sharing the show on Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening. More reviews, more ratings, and more shares will help more people find the Become a Writer Today podcast. And did you know for just a couple of dollars a month, you could become a Patreon for the show? Visit patreon.com/becomeawritertoday or look for the support button in the show notes. Your support will help me record, produce, and publish more episodes each month. And if you become a Patreon, I'll give you my writing books, discounts on writing software, and on my writing courses.